The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The renowned American journalist and political biographer Robert Caro wrote that when a man is climbing, trying to persuade others to give him power, concealment is necessary. But as soon as the man obtains more power, camouflage becomes less necessary. But does power actually corrupt the individual or simply amplify the personality traits that are already there, as demonstrated by the invasion of Ukraine and also effectively making himself Russian president for life? Vladimir Putin has long wielded power in a pretty reckless and uncamouflaged manner. Is he the exception or the rule? Now, to get some insight into this, I'm joined now by clinical psychologist and neuroscientist, emeritus professor of psychology at Trinity College in Dublin, co-director of the Global Brain Health Institute, and author of a book currently available, How Confidence Works. Ian Robertson, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, you actually featured in a documentary I was looking at last night about Vladimir Putin, in which you kind of put him on the couch.
I did, and that was made in 2018. And I'd written an article a couple of years before then about the danger that lurks in Putin's brain. So his current behavior is unfortunately not a surprise to me.
Now, when he became president, it was almost an accident, wasn't it? That this is the extraordinary thing about his rise to power.
Yes, he was a relatively low-level KGB functionary who happened to get lucky and be taken on. I think it was the mayor of St. Petersburg took him on. And he was a very low-key, quiet man. Now, he was trained in that Marxist-Leninist KGB ruthlessness, where the end justifies the means, and that moral meme really negates any kind of values or anything, allows you to do anything. And so his only commitment was really to the greater Russia, to the Soviet Union. He regarded it as a disaster, the collapse of the Soviet Union. And yeah. His aspiration, his personal journey, if you like, was almost to redeem his own sense of small man humiliation.
And he was unknown.
No.
So what they did was they made him acting president, not knowing what kind of a beast they had unleashed.
Absolutely. And, he was a man who used to beat up, a boy who used to beat up people. He was a self-confessed thug. So in Dresden, when the crowds were trying to get in after the wall had gone down, trying to get into the Stasi headquarters, he went out alone and told them there were troops inside, and he saw them off, which was quite a brave thing to do. There were no troops inside; he was on his own. So he's a tough guy. But he was low-key, and no one ever, and I don't think he ever imagined. He even drove taxis for a while in St. Petersburg during that chaos after the fall of the wall. And no one ever imagined. As you say, he was made acting president, and suddenly the whiff of power, the actuality of power. And Caro's quote is just absolutely right. It's astonishing. You need a certain personality to climb the greasy pole. You need to have an appetite for dominance and ruthlessness. So if you don't have these appetites, you won't get there,
no matter how benign your political ambitions might be to help your people or whatever. Unless you're a bit tough, you're not going to make it.
Exactly. That being said, if you or I, Pat, were to be made president for life of Europe or Ireland or whatever, without constraints, democratic constraints, it would change our brains. Power is the greatest brain-changing drug. It's as big a brain-changing drug as heroin is.
Power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts. Absolutely.
It does. It has very, very predictable and measurable effects on the brain, which is why I was able, 10 years ago, to predict Putin's behaviour. Because I knew what effects power has on the brain.
When the big rush of getting the job, acting president, and then, of course, becoming president, and then running out of terms but changing the rules, Medvedev became president, he became prime minister while still running the show, then he changed the constitution, becoming president for life. Are we seeing a parallel in China?
Well, even the Communist Party used to change their leaderships every 10 years, even though it was an authoritarian communist Marxist-Leninist system. They changed their leadership. She changed all that. And now he has recreated, you know, an empire with a highly authoritarian structure. Yeah. And the problem with that is, this, empirically, authoritarian dictators start wars much more than people who have some constraints on them, semi-democratic or semi-democratic countries.
Now, you know, when you think of the Soviet Union and everyone was supposed to be treated equally, and in some ways, I mean, I remember the fall of the wall and going there and only paying 5 kopecks on the underground, and ordinary people had not great lives. No. I mean, they had to queue for everything, yeah. but poverty wasn't there. Then yeah. the system fell and there was poverty, people selling medals on the street, you know, war yeah. medals and yeah. Things like that. That's where Putin comes from, that background where egalitarianism was at the heart of it. But suddenly he became a kleptocrat.
Yes. The Marxist, the communist system did exactly as you said. And you made your way not by money, but by climbing up the greasy pole of the party and getting, you know, and patronage by senior party members. Now, there was material corruption, but materialism wasn't at the heart of it. There was this strange kind of ideology and bureaucracy. You know, it was a bit like being in the civil service in the 1950s. Yeah. You climbed up.
Yeah. But you got perks. Like you might have had access to a car, which other people wouldn't have had.
Apartment.
You got the dacha in the countryside for your holidays, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, just getting an apartment was a big deal. If you read some of the Soviet literature on that, it was a huge thing to get an apartment. But suddenly you have all the state's assets up for grab, and capitalism, raw capitalism, is imported into
now,
Russia.
Yeltsin sold off to the men who became the oligarchs,
the
state's assets.
Yes.
And Putin decided to take that on.
Yes.
And you might have thought, well, he'll give it all back to the people. He'll, you know, democratize industry and so on. But instead, his attitude appeared to be, I want not just some of that, I want all of that.
That's right. And he I remember David Owen, the former British Foreign Secretary, telling me that he was chairman of UKOS International, and he was at Putin was in London for the state visit. It was in Buckingham Palace, would you believe it? And this tall man came up to Owen, poked him in the chest, and said, "Tell Khodorkovsky to stay out of politics." And Khodorkovsky was the head of UKOS. And a few weeks later, Khodorkovsky was in jail because he had threatened Putin's power. You can be an oligarch under the Putin system, but you have to pay him his share. He's a multi-trillionaire, probably. You pay him his share and you do not threaten his absolute political power.
Now, you say that what happens is that the interests of the country, where many politicians might believe they are starting out, Bolsonaro might believe that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure Trump ever believed it. But, you know, she may have believed it. Putin may or may not have believed it. But eventually, they begin to see their own personal interests are at one with the state's interest, which is not necessarily so.
That's right. There's an acquired. David Owen has written a book. He actually was a neurologist, written a book about an acquired personality disorder and an acquired narcissism that happens in people who have unconstrained power. Not everyone succumbs to it. The British prime ministers who did were Lloyd George and Chamberlain and Margaret Thatcher. I think Tony Blair did as well. They went to their heads and they began to feel that they had a mission. Tony Blair felt that God was speaking to him, that he had a kind of divine mission. George Bush felt the same. And once you feel that God has anointed you, then ordinary rules for ordinary mankind don't apply to you. And that allows you to do things which treat other people as objects as well. You lose empathy for other people. You lose self-awareness. Your own interests become identical to those of the state. Money does this to people as well. Elon Musk is showing a similar pattern, because great money gives you great power. He's the richest man in the world, and he's showing a similar pattern of distorted behavior.
I mean, you can go back to the Roman emperors, Caligula,
yeah.
who was going to be a benign leader very quickly.
Yeah.
went rogue.
And Julius Caesar had appointed himself a demigod in his own lifetime, and had statues, god statues erected to him. The thing is, we're a group species. Groups have hierarchies, and it's quite efficient for groups to have a leader, and that's how we've really evolved as a species. It took a few millennia for them to learn that being the head of the group gives you power, and it distorts your brain, and it leads the group into trouble. So, the Magna Carta, the basics of democracy, of governance, were invented. Independent judiciary, free press, elections. Mm. All these are mechanisms to constrain the effects of power on a leader's brain.
Yeah, but when you have autocracy, which we have, it's nothing new. Go back to, what is Louis the XIV, did he not say, l'état, c'est moi.
C'est
the
moi.
State,
oui,
it's
oui.
Me.
Yeah, and après moi, le déluge. Yeah. and that's they come to believe that they hold the whole thing together. But that's true. I mean, Russia is going to fall apart if Putin goes, because he's created such an absolute authoritarian system. And we have his army doesn't work because it has a similarly authoritarian system. There are no NCOs. They reckon the Ukrainian army is doing so much better than the Russian one because of the middle management feel empowered and are not commanded and controlled from above.
Now, he obviously had wars in Chechnya, in Georgia.
Yeah.
That they got out before his time out of Afghanistan, where they got a bloody nose. But war has been a constant for Russia, pretty much. Is Putin likely to press the nuclear button based on your psychological assessment, or does he have enough of a self-preservation aspect to him that would say no?
You know what? I wouldn't like to predict that. I was able, on the basis of the science, to predict his current pattern of behaviour. But now there are so many facts. Now you have not just the effects of power in the brain, you have the effects of paranoia and fear on the brain. And that combination of states of power, paranoia, fear, and all the political machinations,
yeah.
God knows what he's capable of now. That's the problem. I think COVID had a major effect on him. He isolated himself even more.
The assassins and the poisoners couldn't get to him.
And the fear of getting the disease.
The disease was something he could not control.
Exactly. And the baroque procedures to get in, even if you were a diplomat, you had to give feces samples, you had to go through a tunnel where you were sprayed. I mean, it was just absolutely incredible, his paranoia. But he became even more, that 2 years of COVID, really, he came out of that. And if you remember his Security Council meeting, where he had this, for the first time he appeared so emotional and angry, and he humiliated all the leaders, getting them to agree about the annexation of the regions of Ukraine. That was an abnormal emotional state, and it's that kind of, I wouldn't have predicted that. That was, and I think that partly was his isolation and COVID, and so that makes me not willing, and unfortunately not able to say, yeah, no, he's okay, he's too worried about his own health to press the button. I just don't know.
But the end of Putin, I mean, he could go on for another 10 years or more as a perpetual leader.
He's 79% approval still in Russia.
Yeah, so that's what I was getting at. Are there any people around him who might do him down? Because you go back to maybe the Stasi in East Germany, no one trusted anybody, not their neighbours, not even members of their family. In Stalin's time, no one ever knew when the early morning knock on the door was going to happen.
That's right.
I mean, if you wanted to collude against him, who can you trust?
You can't. And the only people that could possibly, it strikes me, would be the Chechenian leader, is a Kadyrov, and then the head of Wagner, Prigozhin. I mean, these are two monsters themselves.
Yeah, it would not necessarily be an improvement.
It would not necessarily be an improvement at all.
Wagner is this paramilitary mercenary outfit, really.
Yeah, and so maybe the best we can hope for is a kind of diminished, clinging on to power, rump of a Putin, you know, frozen until he dies. That might be the best from our point of view.
The last question really is about the Russian people. I mean, people here are kind of despising the Russian people now, even though if you meet individual Russians, they may be fine and they may be anti-Putin and so on. But what is it about the Russian personality that admires so much the strong man that overlooks atrocity, which he's certainly guilty of?
Yeah, well, basically your political awareness is defined by the media you're exposed to, and you know most Russians, television is their source of information, and it's such a bizarre and distorted picture of the world they get from that. It's kind of not surprising that they buy into that. The educated intelligence one. Remember, there were demonstrations against Putin when he became president. The middle classes in Moscow were out, and it looked as if, oh, good, we might have a democratic revolution. They were squished down. Yeltsin was the only ever, and Putin, I suppose, initially, the only democratically elected leaders ever in the history of Russia. It's always had a strong man. It's how what people expect. It's what they feel comfortable with. And then if you combine that with absolute control of the media, then their worldview is just so different from ours.
Ian Robertson, clinical psychologist and author of How Confidence Works. Ian, thank you very much for joining us on the programme today.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.